If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference, this show is for you.
Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
I one day just ran across the legend of Sergius and Bacchus, and the more digging I did, the more I thought, well, this is just such a beautiful and interesting story. It changed so many of my perceptions about Christianity and sexuality and relationships in the ancient world and how they've changed and how they remain the same.
Author, artist, and political activist David Reddish tells a poignant love story in his new novel, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus. His book, set in 357 AD, is based on actual historical fact, including a number of things most people didn't realize about the early Christian church. David, how did you first realize that writing was what you really wanted to do?
Oh, it's such a cliche answer, you know. It's something I always did from the time I was very, very little. And I think it was in my last semester of film school at the University of Central Florida. And I had developed a very good relationship with my screenwriting professor, a man named Barry Sandler, and who's actually one of the advisors at Outfest here in Los Angeles. And he said, look, you're wasting your life if you don't go to L.A. and become a writer. So I took his advice, and I came out here, and I starved, but I started writing books. So that's sort of where I am.
All the starving appears to have paid off 2 books later, and you've got this great new novel, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus. How did you come to write that?
Oh, well, it's in sort of a roundabout way, I'd been encouraged to go into the ministry a great deal. I was raised Protestant, and I was very active in our church growing up, and so theology and history were sort of things that I always read about. And I one day just ran across the legend of Sergius and Bacchus, because they are real people, or they are purported to be real people. And the more digging I did, the more I thought, well, this is just such a beautiful and interesting story. It changed so many of my perceptions about Christianity and sexuality and relationships in the ancient world and how they've changed and how they remain the same. And sort of sitting in the United States in the early 21st century, where we're having a big conversation about same-sex relationships, and ultimately, I think what comes down to the nature of love, I thought this is a story that I think is relevant, and it's one that I found moving. And I thought someone should write it. I didn't think I should write it myself. I suppose I should add that as well. I did a lot of hemming and hawing, and one day I actually ended up with a portrait of Sergius and Bacchus, which is from the 7th century, and there was just something so haunting about it, about looking at these two men together, that I thought, all right, I guess this is what I have to do. So I started writing, and I did a lot more research, and I kept writing. And about 3 years later, I was ready to go, and it's finished, and it's out there now, and I don't quite know what to do. So,
before we look at your book itself, what were some of the precepts that you had grown up with about Christianity that you found your ideas were changing when you were discovering the story of Sergius and Bacchus?
Oh, well, that's a very good question. One of the precepts that I was really shocked by, I suppose, or one of the things that I took for granted, was that marriage and sexuality were welcomed within early Christianity, when in point of fact, they were not. They were accepted, but people who were early Christians, certainly at the time of Jesus or shortly thereafter during the time of the Apostle Paul, they were discouraged from marrying. They were discouraged from sex. And this was all sex. There was no concept of a gay person or a straight person or gay sex or straight sex. It was just all sex was bad. And I had been raised, oh, sex is God's gift as long as you're a man doing it with a woman or you're a woman doing it with a man. And even then, there are certain gender roles that have to be maintained. All of that went straight out the window for me when I started doing the research. And the more nuance I discovered, the reasons behind this thinking and the reasons behind the change, the evolution of relationships within Christianity to the point where marriage is no longer discouraged, it's almost expected, certainly within certain denominations, and the role of gay people within the faith, which of course is a very, very hot subject all over the world. gay people were understood and welcomed within the early church, and they were what we would consider to be married. It gets into some of the complexities and nuance in the book, but same-sex relationships and unions were welcomed within early Christianity.
In fact, your book has a ceremony, and I'm never going to be able to pronounce this correctly, but your two main characters are joined in unity in a, what do you say, adelpha, help me please.
Adelphopoiesis. Adelphopoiesis, is, at least that's the way I was taught to say it. And literally translated, that's ancient Greek, and it means brother-making. That's the literal translation. To put a more modern context on it, you could say it's a ceremony of the same gender, or a same-sex union, or gay marriage, because it was considered to be a sacrament on par with marriage.
And in fact, I didn't know that existed until I read The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus. Let's go back to the beginning of the book, time period 357 AD. We meet your main character, Sergius. What's going on in his life as you start your novel?
Well, Sergius, at the outset of the novel, Sergius is a Roman soldier. He's what they call a scola palatine, so kind of an elite army corps, cavalry corps. And they are at Strasbourg, which is the same as the modern-day Strasbourg. And they're fighting in a massive battle against Germanic tribes. He's a Roman soldier, and he's fighting with the emperor himself. And he's questioning a lot of things in his life, the value of his life, how feeble life seems to be. His whole family was murdered when he was a young adult, and he's never quite recovered from that. He's haunted by death. He is someone who sees life as this sort of fatalistic, everything ends with death. There's nothing beyond death, and it's inevitable. And it's such a nihilistic and despairing worldview for him. He doesn't know how to cope with that. And I think most of the story is about him learning to keep going and to find the things that propel all to keep going, even though we know we will all die eventually.
Tell me the beginning of his love story with Bacchus. What happens?
Well, I don't want to spoil too much, but Bacchus is also a soldier. Bacchus is an interesting character. He is an illegitimate child. He was raised Roman, but is actually more German, or he's half German, which is frowned upon by the rest of the Roman army. But he works very hard to speak the language of the emperor, which is Greek. And he is smitten with Sergius the moment he meets him. Sergius's reaction is a little bit more complicated, but these two guys understand each other. And like anybody who's been in love, you understand each other on this strange, ethereal level.
And in fact, you capture the level of that love and what it's like to be so much in love with somebody that's almost terrifying. At one point, you have Sergius having nightmares. What was that like for you as a writer? Was it easy, challenging, or otherwise?
Well, the love scenes are always tricky. Orson Welles had kind of a great line about this. He said, and I paraphrase, he gets sick of seeing people in love scenes or in scenes where they're praying in the movies. And so writing a love scene or a sex scene is very... it's tricky to do because the power of that comes from experiencing it. It doesn't necessarily come from the voyeuristic quality of watching or reading someone else go through it. So what I tried to do, and my approach to it, was what does this really feel like? And what is the raw emotion of it? Because doing that, I could make it about the connection between two people. And that, to me, is erotic. That's the key to making a sexy scene, to making a believable love scene, a captivating one. And so Sergius' nightmares are a manifestation of that. They're a manifestation of, first of all, he's a very anxious character, I think just kind of naturally. But they're a manifestation of his love for Bacchus and the idea that, oh my gosh, I found something so perfect, I want to protect it with everything I have because I'm so happy I don't want to be unhappy again.
And in fact, when something is that perfect, you're scared to death that real life is going to intervene.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah.
Your Emperor Julian is a complex character, too. What's happening with him as the book progresses?
Well, Julian was a pleasure to write because Julian was a real emperor. He's more commonly referred to as Julian the Apostate, Roman emperor, the last pagan emperor of Rome. and he is a lot like Sergius. What's interesting to me in my research, most of what Julian says, believe it or not, and you're the first person to get this quote, so enjoy. Most of what Julian says or does in the book are things he actually said or did. Or sort of paraphrasing, the real Julian did a tremendous amount of writing, which was very unusual for an emperor in his time, where the emperor was more of a military figure. He was also called the philosopher emperor because he was so educated and so erudite and so high-minded. He is someone who thinks that the Romans are losing their patriotic identity by converting to Christianity. He wants to go back to the pagan faith, not because he believes in any of it. He's pretty much an atheist. But he believes that it's important in the same way, I guess, today that we celebrate the 4th of July or Thanksgiving in the United States or Washington or Lincoln's birthday. He thinks going and having, you know, the orgies at the Temple of Venus or, you know, paying tribute to the emperor or celebrating the Temple of Jupiter or whatever, that's part of the Roman identity. And to lose that, you're losing your sense of patriotism, and the empire is losing its sense of self, its sense of balance.
I kind of never know where he's going to go. You kind of don't know that when you're reading. One moment he's very compassionate, and another he's acts like a spoiled child having a tantrum, quite honestly. It's really interesting.
Sure. Well, he's a very volatile character. I mean, I had to be very careful because I found him so compelling as a real-life figure. I didn't want him to sort of steal the story away from Sergius and Bacchus. But he was a very volatile man. He was a very passionate man. And the stresses of rule definitely, both in my story and in history, eroded his outlook over time. He's, a very tragic figure, but nonetheless a compelling one.
He's one that people won't forget very easily. Tell me also about the deaconess.
Messerina. She's a deaconess. Messerina was also a real person who would have been a contemporary of Sergius and Bacchus and Julian. She was ordained within the Christian faith. And she was a missionary who traveled all over Europe and Asia Minor, converting people to Christianity. And she was sort of the last vestige of what would have been early pre-Roman Christianity, where it was more of an egalitarian faith. Women were considered to be on par with men. Women could be ordained. This is scripturally based, I would add, in the Bible. And I wanted to add a feminine figure because women were obviously considered second-class citizens in Roman society. And I wanted to contrast Christianity with Roman society. And I wanted a strong woman to sort of make up for the lack of presence of women throughout the rest of the story. You've got two guys in love, and you've got a bunch of guys sitting around ruling the empire. She's a stirring character. She's a convicted character. And she's also passionate. Passion being a theme through all of this, I think.
And what is kind of interesting and a surprise is that Sergius makes a decision you kind of wouldn't expect after his first few conversations with her.
Yes, he does. Again, without spoiling it, the relationship between Messerina and Sergius, I thought these would be two people who would respect one another, but they would not necessarily like one another right away. Messerina is an intelligent woman, in the same way that Sergius is an intelligent and educated man, as is Julian. And so these three characters, to me, sort of mirror one another in odd ways, in the conviction of their belief and in their tactics to accomplish their objectives. And Sergius is sort of in the middle of these two poles, one being Messerina and one being Julian, trying to answer some very, very big questions. They both have answers. It's a matter of which do I choose to believe?
And I promise not to say anything more about it because I don't want to spoil it. This is a great story. However, in what ways does Sergius and Bacchus' spiritual journey together parallel the spiritual journey you've taken as an artist and a writer?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I don't know. Whatever it says that my first novel was about a comic book nerd and my second one was about a couple of martyrs, a couple of gay martyrs who really want to get married to each other. That's sort of, you know, I'm a comic book nerd who's a gay guy who wants to get married and has fought for that right in his country. I think it probably, honest to God, I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer that question. Maybe you'd be better to speak to it, or you'd be better off asking some of my friends and colleagues. I don't know why I'm attracted to the stories that I am, and I don't know exactly how my life, other than in weird superficial details, has mirrored that of Sergius or Bacchus or Julian or Masserina or any of the characters.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot with that question. What I was wondering about, because at first I did think, wow, your first one about Comic-Con did seem very different, and now you're writing about two gay saints. What would, if any, would you say were the similarities in your message in each of your two books?
Well, a great question. And it's funny because it took me, I think I was about a year into the writing process of Sergius and Bacchus before anybody said to me, why are you writing a book about gay saints living in the fourth century? You know, you're the guy who wrote the Comic-Con book, you know, about the geeks and the movies and the superheroes and everything. Well, to me, Sergius and Liquinsonos, who's the protagonist of my first novel, they're both outsiders, and they're both men in moments of crisis, men who have to make life-changing decisions, and men who desperately want love and compassion and understanding in their lives. And I think that's probably why I love both of those characters so much. That's what compelled me to write them and to become so involved with them and to pick them as the sort of focal point of either story.
We should mention that The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus is a finalist for an award. Would you tell me about this, please?
Well, it's the Rainbow Award for Outstanding Achievement in Fiction for LGBT characters, and I believe for LGBT authors as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's very, very flattering, and it came somewhat out of the blue. I had no idea I was even being considered for it, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful honor.
This is fantastic. I'd love to have people know the time and place that you're going to be reading from your work.
Well, it's on the 20th, and it's part of San Gabriel Valley Pride. They're partnering with Roman's Bookstore, and I think I'm on at 1 o'clock. I have to check my date book. I believe I'm doing a live reading at 1 o'clock, and I'm not sure if it'll be at the festival or if it will be at Roman's. I know it will be on both the San Gabriel Valley Pride website and the Roman's website, as well as the Digital Fabulists website, the electronic branch of my publisher. You can find all the details there. And I would love it if your listeners would come out and say hello.
I will certainly link to that. As we conclude here, David, what would you most like people to take away from your message in your novel, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus, about innovating, creating, and making a difference?
Well, wow, that's a weighty question. I hope that people who read Sergius and Bacchus or any of my work, I hope they feel challenged by it. I hope it makes them feel maybe less alone. I hope they identify with the characters. And I don't know that I necessarily want them to find answers in my work. I want them to find questions. Because I don't think I could answer anyone else's questions. I think that's what life is all about, figuring it out for ourselves. But I think any great work of art should challenge us, and it should make us feel something. And I really, really hope I do that with Sergius and Bacchus.
David, thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Dad. It is so wonderful to talk to you.
You and I have been listening to author, artist, and political activist David Reddish, who will be reading from his new book, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus, at 1 o'clock this Saturday afternoon, September 20th, at the San Gabriel Valley Pride LGBT Festival. The San Gabriel Valley Pride LGBT Festival is themed Reflections of Pride and is happening in Pasadena's Memorial Park, located at Holly near North Raymond Avenue. Admission's free and everyone's invited to the Pride Festival, which runs from 11 o'clock in the morning till 6 p.m., again the date this Saturday, September 20th. And in fact, the Authors Forum will be located right there in Memorial Park. You'll find the schedule for their author readings, in addition to the other events going on throughout the day, at sgvpride.org. That's sgvpride.org. Meanwhile, if you'd like to know more about David's work or order his new book, The Passion of Sergius and Bacchus, you'll find information at sergiusandbacchus.com. That's Sergius, S-E-R-G-I-U-S, dash, A-N-D, dash, Bacchus, B-A-C-C-H-U-S.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.